This week's TribCast is presented by Opportunity Days, the shared plan for regional opportunity, the University of Texas at El Paso, May 2nd through the 3rd. Was that good, Ned? Okay, we're done with that one then. And with no further ado, Mr. Elliot Nashtad.
Hi, I'm Elliot Nashtad, state representative for District 49, which which includes the 40 acres. Some of you may recall how hard I worked to save the Cactus Cafe. Sometimes going mano a mano with President Bill Powers. If I had known that this is what I was fighting for, the Texas Tribune TribCast, I probably would have reconsidered getting involved. And now, live on the stage, your TribCast crew.
Thank you, Representative Nashtad. And we'd just like to say congratulations on your primary victory.
It was tough.
Yeah. No, Representative Nashtad is unopposed in the primary, so feel free to shake his hand on the way out. I'm Reeve Hamilton. I'm a reporter at the Texas Tribune. Joining me for our TribCast, and thanks for having us here, by the way, is editor Emily Ramshaw.
Hi there.
Reporter Julian Aguilar.
Hello. How are you?
I feel like Emily got more applause.
I feel that way as well. Thank you. Now are we just on the left side?
And Ben Philpott of KUT and the Texas Tribune.
Good evening.
We are going to be talking about matters political and policy related.
Hopefully.
Yeah, we'll find out, I guess. No, we're going to be talking about races to watch, Supreme Court cases to watch, and some prominent Texans in the national media. Like we said, we probably won't be talking about Representative Nashtad's race because it's just honestly not very exciting. But there are a number of other races with some fireworks going on. Emily, what are you most interested in?
I was up in Dallas last week following a couple of pretty interesting races. I think the most exciting for me right now is Congressional District 33, which is this sort of long horizontal district that spans Fort Worth and Dallas. And basically you have 11 Democratic contenders who are vying to win that primary. They range from, you know, the questions over whether this is going to be a Fort Worth district or a Dallas district. You know, for example, you have Mark Vesey, the Fort Worth state representative, is running. Kathleen Hicks, who's also a city council member in Fort Worth. And then on the other side of the district in Dallas, you have, you know, a longtime Hispanic leader, Domingo Garcia. You know, you have a gentleman, Al Emile, who has poured $2 million of his own money into this race. So it's really fascinating. And I think the biggest interesting indicator is going to be whether this district, again, goes Dallas or Fort Worth, or whether it goes black or Hispanic. And there are lots of questions around, you know, population and voter turnout. So that for me is, I think, probably, you know, one of the sexiest races to watch. There's a lot of money, a lot of players, and a lot of drama already.
When you say there are 11 candidates filed, how many sort of actual viable candidates?
Probably five. I mean, and that's huge. It's going to be a runoff,
yeah,
basically, no matter what. Yeah. Right. I mean, it's huge. Another one that's a pretty fun one is Eddie Bernice Johnson's race, Congressional District 30. She's probably a shoo-in, but there are a couple of really strange things that have happened in this race. And the first is that Obama has endorsed her in a primary, which is pretty unusual. She has some pretty fierce opposition from a young man, this Harvard-educated kid who came back to the community, who has Obama's 2008 campaign field director as his campaign director. And so it's a pretty interesting lineup. And you also have running for that same seat State Representative Barbara Mallory Caraway. Eddie Bernice Johnson clearly feels like she's playing defense right now. She basically came out, you know, and called the man who's running for the seat, his name is Taj Clayton. She called him, like, you know, a shill for Republicans. And she questioned the mental health of Barbara Mallory Caraway.
And most people that, you know, have President Obama's campaign director are shills for the Republican Party.
Right. Yeah, right. Exactly. So those are my two, I would say, most interesting primaries to watch right now.
Well, and they affect more than... Is this
not on? Yeah, you can just leave them up, I think. Thanks.
Except
for Reeves.
The primary that you mentioned in the Dallas-Fort Worth one affects more than just that race, right? There are concerns about sort of the funding and that leaking over and affecting, like, Lon Burnham's district.
Yeah, right. Lon Burnham is all out of sorts because he's
long-time Democrat.
Right, long-time Democrat in Fort Worth who's, you know, running for re-election, right?
Yes.
You know, he's concerned that basically the race, you know, if too much money is given to Hispanic candidates in that in his district or in neighboring 33, that it could affect voter turnout for his race.
And here's where we will talk about redistricting a little. One of the things that he was concerned about is that his district did not get changed from Democrat to Republican, but it did add a lot of Hispanic precincts into his district. So, again, if there's Hispanic money flowing in for a Hispanic congressional candidate, that could end up hurting him. I'll just jump in there. Speaking of Hispanic precincts being added, the biggest thing that probably Austin politicos will be watching, even if they're not in that district, is the new congressional district running from southeast Travis County to northeast Bexar County. That is the district that Lloyd Doggett has decided to run in. He's not going to run in his current district, which now goes from the Tarrant County line down into west Travis County, because a Democrat cannot win that district.
Isn't his current district the one with the most of his constituents? It's the district that was created that contains the most constituents of his old district, which is still only like 40% or something.
Yes, but it's he can't win it. So, wait a minute. Are you 25?
I'm talking about the one he's running in.
The 35. Yes, 35. The numbers are very confusing. Yes, but it's a district that does have more votes coming out of the Bexar County area than the Travis County area, and you have. Everybody who's a Democrat in Bexar County has endorsed Sylvia Romo, who is the tax assessor collector there in Bexar County.
But isn't Doggett historically like the best shoe leather, you know, candidate? I mean, isn't he the guy?
Well, he was. I mean, in terms of recent examples of this, when he was redistricted into one of the Bacon Strip districts that ran from Travis County to the Mexican border, he did run against a judge. I believe she was a judge down in McAllen. And he went down to McAllen and to the border and, yeah, pressed the leather and easily won that primary, even though I believe it was at the time Travis County Senator actually endorsed the judge from the border. And I'm forgetting the Travis County Senator. Who was the senator before Watson, everyone?
Barrientos,
that's it. So, you know, yeah, everything. The woman that he ran against in 2003 or 2005 did not have a lot of name ID, and he knew how to work the political apparatus down there. Sylvia Romo has already received all the backing from the political apparatus in Bexar County. So Doggett is going to have to, you know, peel off votes differently than he did last time he had this kind of a challenge.
Well, and she has that interesting problem where she doesn't want to tell anyone her age.
Yeah, that was...
Not that makes her different from many people, but...
Right. We still don't know how old Reeve actually is.
Well, I'm 69. Just like Sylvia Romo. And the issue there is that, you know, if you're in a position where you have to develop seniority, will she have time to develop seniority? A significant number of people in Bexar County seem to think so.
Well, you know, there have been some arguments made from Democrats who don't want to be named because Lloyd Doggett has been the congressman of Austin forever. But there are some who feel like, well, you know, Lloyd, you had your chance to get into a leadership position when the Democrats took control of Congress. You didn't get anything really great. So maybe we need some new blood up there. And if Congress were to flip again, maybe people would give this new candidate a better chance and a better look than what Lloyd Doggett now has up there.
Right, that's similar. I've been looking at a Bexar County race, the state Senate District 25, where...
Which also goes into Southern Travis.
Right. Where Senator Wentworth is trying to hold on to his seat, and he has this... you know, it's an interesting situation. Elizabeth Ann Jones, the former railroad commissioner who ran for U.S. Senate, is now... has moved back into her... the district she grew up in, which is his district, and she's running against him.
Forced to resign from her position by Wentworth, correct?
Right. I mean, are all these residency issues resolved at this point?
She has a residency in her district, and in her filing, she was there for the requisite amount of time. But when she was railroad commissioner, she was constitutionally obligated to live in the capital of the state, which is not necessarily in that district. So that was... you know, that became a bit of an issue. And then Donna Campbell, who's also running, and she's sort of, you know, she doesn't have the money. Elizabeth Ames Jones has TLR backing her. Wentworth is an incumbent, so he's been around. He has some money. Donna Campbell's a doctor. You know, her pro-life is a big issue for her. Wentworth is famously a pro-choice Republican. You know, she also recently moved into the district.
And she had a pretty decent run against Lloyd Doggett 2 years ago. I mean, that was the one where when early voting totals came out, she was beating him. And then he caught up throughout the night. But
Wentworth has an interesting situation with his opponents. Both of them have said, you know, Elizabeth Ames Jones and Donna Campbell both had people come to them and ask them to run against Wentworth because he is perceived partly because of being pro-choice and for sort of, you know, taking on issues that the party doesn't always... go along with, or he's not going along with the party.
But he also quite prominently didn't exactly seem like he wanted this job anymore, right?
Right.
I mean, he went, which was at Texas State, where he very aggressively was pursuing, seemed to be pursuing being chancellor.
He applied for it, said he was, you know, he said that Texas State people came to him and asked him to apply for, and he did the Texas State University System chancellorship. And he came in second for that job and very publicly disagreed with the decision and sort of ruffled some feathers. And then there were a lot of news stories about him considering a job at A&M or A&M considering giving a job to him. And so some people said that he didn't want the seat. You know, he obviously says that if he didn't want it, he wouldn't be running for it now.
You know, I'm doing – so Reeves doing a story on it for the Texas Tribune. I'm doing a story on that Senate race for KUT as well. And if I'm – I may be wrong on this, but I can't find a re-election website for Senator Wentworth.
I think he's sort of coasting on his reputation at the moment.
Which has not
won him a lot of fans over at Empower Texans and other sort of far-right conservative advocacy groups.
What did Senator Zaffarini refer to him as? Some Don Quixote reference?
Your honorable senator.
the man of La Mancha is what she called him, right? Yeah, because of his sort of, I guess, avant-garde or renegade sort of attitude on
Well, I mean, in the...
Files a lot of windmill legislation.
Yes, a lot.
And for those who don't know the whole process, he is the only senator there that does not vote to speed up the process that bills get passed. You have to read a bill three different times, and you have to wait 24 hours before you can get to each successive reading. The Senate suspends those rules almost all the time, and he always votes no. Now, that's, you know, it's a minor thing, but, yeah, he definitely has
enough to make him a giant thorn in the side when everybody else wants to go home.
Right, yeah.
Well, and he also, you know, it's interesting, his chief agenda points when you ask him, like, what do you want to stay in the Texas Senate to do? You know, he's been in there for decades now.
He carried
the campus carry bill the last two sessions. That hasn't
For those of you who are backing him tonight, it's actually not a law. You can't. Yeah. Sorry.
But he wants to pass a sort of bipartisan redistricting committee, and he wants...
Which he almost... got passed, at least out of the Senate, in the last session. And then somebody changed their mind.
But, you know, he's trying to advance issues like that, which are sort of very, I don't know how much they resonate with...
Not very red meat.
...people at home when they're sitting, looking at their yard and what they want to change in their neighborhood. But what are you looking at, Julian?
I will still just sit here and drink beer. the West Texas, the El Paso delegation... Congressional District 16 features Congressman Silver Reyes, who's been there since 1996. Just talking about the endorsements, President Obama endorsed him as well last week. President Clinton was in El Paso actually campaigning for Congressman Reyes today. And this started off as, some people called it a close race. He's facing a former city councilman, Beto O'Rourke, who is part of the younger sort of progressive element in El Paso. He tried to pass a resolution to decriminalize marijuana, thinking that that would ease up on the violence in Juarez and Chihuahua that's plaguing northern Mexico, as everybody knows. He was involved in a same-sex partner benefit thing that is the whole point of a sort of recall petition going out in El Paso. So he's very outspoken. He's very progressive for that part of town. But I think President Obama and President Clinton, back in the congressman, kind of, it didn't take the wind completely out of his sails, but it's more of an uphill battle for him now. Switching over to the House side, El Paso's going to have a very, very, excuse me, young delegation.
It's hard to talk about.
Yeah, it's near and dear to my heart. Thanks, Ryan. HD 75 was a former state representative, or current state representative, soon to be former Chinta Quintanilla. He's opted out. He's running for county commissioner. So that will be a freshman. Joe Moody wants a seat back from DeMargo, so he will be a sophomore. He returns, as will D if he wins. That's a general election battle. Naomi Gonzalez is unchallenged, as is Joe Pickett. And which is the other one? Marisa Marquez faces actually kind of a formidable foe in a young guy named Aaron Barraza. He's 23 years old. He's picked up the endorsements of a lot of law enforcement. 23, yeah.
But how old Reeve is.
What have I done with my life?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can look up to him, Reeve. But so that it's going to be very interesting in El Paso. The El Paso delegation always says, you know, we're so far out there, we're ignored. You know, we need more power in the state. So it's going to be interesting to see the way things play out in the primary. And they do have some Republican challengers, but as a lot of people know on the border, especially in El Paso, the Democratic primary is the election.
We talked a little bit about how redistricting affect other districts. What did it do to El Paso? Anything much?
It was potentially an issue because Representative Moody thought about challenging his former colleague, Representative Marquez, but he decided to go against that and challenge Representative Margo in the general election.
So they didn't? Did they draw a safe district for Margo? Or I mean, is this a?
They did. They, I mean, you know, obviously Moody's folks say it's a toss-up. You know, they're pretty confident, but and Margo's people say no, we're safe. It wasn't as much of a bloodbath as say other districts were, but he represents the west side of El Paso, which is predominantly the more conservative, affluent side of the city.
How much weight do these prominent Democrats carry? These national figures, like when Obama comes into Eddie Bernice Johnson's race or Clinton comes in El Paso, is it just game over at that point?
Well, see, the thing was when President Clinton endorsed Congressman Reyes, everybody thought, well, Beto O'Rourke still has a chance to get the Obama Democrats, the youngest, you know, same thing it would, because Clinton, Secretary Clinton, won 2-1 in El Paso during that primary. So people are saying, well, if Beto can still get the Obama Democrats, maybe it could be the youth versus the establishment thing. And then lo and behold, President Obama, one of his, was it four endorsements that we said of
four.
Incumbents?
Yeah. Four, yeah.
Came out last week. So, you know, Clinton is still a rock star in El Paso. And so is the president, but I think President Clinton had a lot of weight. Obama, you know, took whatever thunder that Beto still had. So I think it's going to be definitely an uphill battle. But Mr. O'Rourke is not giving up. He says he's knocking on doors. He's tried to peg Congressman Reyes to public corruption scandals that have been plaguing El Paso for years, if not decades. Interestingly enough, HD 75, where Representative Quintanilla is running, the county commissioner from that district was just indicted and arrested on being a lieutenant working for La Línea for the Juarez cartel. So
that's frowned upon?
I'm sorry?
It's frowned upon.
Only in
it
some
depends.
Circles.
Yeah. It depends on what circles
right.
you're in.
Right. I mean, there's one other interesting element that's at play in a bunch of these congressional races, in that one and also in some of these Dallas races, and that is there's a super PAC that's funded largely with some big money Texans, including a bunch in El Paso. It's called the Campaign for Primary Accountability. And basically, this is funded by Leo Lindbeck III predominantly. He's the son of Leo Lindbeck, the big, you know, tort reform.
The second.
Right. The tort reform. Yeah. They happen to be related. But this is this sort of...
You know who his dad was? The first.
Which number?
Senior.
Exactly. But what they're trying to do, basically, is they're, you know, allegedly this bipartisan group that is trying to knock out incumbents who they think have been in office for way too long on either side of the political spectrum. So they're working really hard to knock, you know, Eddie Bernice Johnson out of office in Dallas. You know, they're working also against Joe Barton. It's a pretty, they've, you know, obviously they're playing in a lot of races all around the country, but it's pretty interesting the races that they've cherry-picked in Texas, and they're pouring a lot of money in.
Well, you know,
I was going to say Congressman Reyes can also, you know, highlight his former, you know, Border Patrol sector chief in, you know, El Paso. He was actually the one that initiated Hold the Line, which, when he was a sector chief, took the Border Patrol away from the inner city and put them right on the front lines. This was something that wasn't approved. He just did it. President Clinton, you know, applauded him for that effort, for that move. And this PAC, I asked Mr. O'Rourke about this PAC, which is supporting Beto, and he said, look, I have no control over who gives me money. So, you know, I mean, if somebody wants to fill up my, you know, car with gas, I'm not gonna argue.
But didn't a similar sentiment sort of drive the Tea Party last go around, and it didn't really seem to have that much effect ultimately?
Well, and I was going to say, here in Travis County, we have kind of another iteration of that. It's not just Travis County, but there are three races in Travis County that they're focusing on. Go, which is GOOOH, get out of our house. They say they're a nonpartisan group, and they may be, but they're running running Republicans in every race, and they are going after Michael McCaul here in Travis County. They also have one of the 11 in Congressional District 25, they also have one in I've got one in another district.
Just trust him.
Maybe that's a good chance then to move away from political matters and onto policy matters, since they're so different.
Less easy to forget.
That was a good transition.
Yeah.
Reeve works really hard on his transition, so if you all could applaud real quickly, that'd be great. Go ahead.
That's not true. But thank you for the applause. We were talking about races to watch, but tomorrow Julian, I believe, will be watching the Supreme Court.
But I will be following it, yes. The Arizona SB 1070 goes before the Supreme Court tomorrow. And obviously...
What is that?
Call it what you will, your papers, please, Bill.
Don't help him.
Yeah. specifically four sections that were enjoined by the district court in Phoenix, they're going to be looking at whether it's a crime to solicit employment, which the Migration Policy Institute says... You know, could mean anything from just nodding your head, saying, you know, the people you see outside of the Home Depot here on the side of the road, you know, the day labor people, makes it a crime not to carry your immigration papers on you, you know, which is where they get the papers please phrase from, makes it a, gives law, or requires law enforcement to question people about their immigration status if they have probable cause or they suspect that you're in the country illegally. And a lot of obviously heartburn with that, because what does somebody need to do or to look like or walk or whatnot to, you know, raise suspicion? So these are going to be obviously controversial issues, and a lot of people, including a lot of state lawmakers here in Texas, are going to be watching to see what happens. And depending on the outcome, they will probably to file some immigration legislation before January. We had 60-plus immigration bills that were debated in the House and the Senate this last session. Not one made it out. So,
but does this have any effect on Texas, or is this purely an Arizona thing? I mean, hasn't the governor basically said that he does not think the Arizona approach is the right approach for Texas?
He did say that, but he also made his in-state tuition comment, which had a lot of state lawmakers saying, well, that's the first thing we're going to file, is legislation to repeal the in-state tuition for undocumented students. I believe it's 3 years. You have to be a resident for 3 years.
To graduate from the Texas high school,
sure.
And
then
you get into
certain grade average.
And you have to sign a thing saying that you're going to, pursue the proper documentation as quickly as possible.
No, it goes way beyond Arizona, because the issue is preemption. It's whether the state laws are preempted by the federal government, not whether they're constitutional or not, but just whether or not the federal government, whether the federal government has the only say in immigration enforcement. But it's interesting, because earlier the Supreme Court also, they upheld an Arizona law that requires everybody to use E-Verify, which is another controversial, some people call it immigration enforcement measure, which, you know, electronically verifies somebody's information that they put on an I-9 or an employment form. Same thing in Texas. We had a lot of lawmakers file legislation to pass E-Verify, and a lot of people didn't like it, including several Republican business owners that said it's a flawed system. I don't like it. We need to sort of look at it for another 2 years to see whether it's good for Texas or not.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, you know, the states' rights battles are like, you know, the rallying cry, the war cry for both Perry and for Greg Abbott. I mean, you know, is this an area, are they speaking out a lot on Arizona, or are they playing quiet on this one? I mean, it seems like Texas jumps into basically every state's rights battle.
You can only fight so many fights at once.
I know.
They're not you know, beating that drum as loudly as they would with the EPA, for example.
Or right, for health
healthcare.
Reform.
Yeah, exactly, right. For health reform. Because it's a volatile issue. It's a border state. You know, I mean, there's a growing Latino population that a lot of people say is going to sway this presidential election. Governor Romney's already been accused of flip-flopping when he said he'd veto the DREAM Act. People asked him for clarification. He said he would veto the DREAM Act. But then when he said Arizona, that he supported the Arizona bill, he kind of backtracked a little bit and said he supported the E-Verify aspect of E-Verify. So we can already see how the political winds of change are blowing with respect to this immigration issue, especially on the border states.
So when the Arizona law was passed, it was the toughest in the country. We've had other states pass things, Alabama, Georgia.
Alabama, Georgia, sure.
Is Arizona's law still the toughest? Did Alabama and Georgia go past?
No, Alabama and Georgia actually a little bit. I mean, some of those have been enjoined, but by the federal court, and people are waiting to see what happens with Arizona before it trickles down to the other states.
With Alabama, the big issue was public education.
Public education.
Families were yanking their kids out of school because of fear of what questions might be asked. In Georgia, it was hiring.
It was an employment issue where you even had farmers go on local television saying literally the peaches are rotting on the vine because there's nobody here to pick it because. Even in Texas, we were getting a lot of calls. A lot of people were saying just the fact that the sanctuary cities, HB 12 and the special session HB 9, was filed. They had no idea about the committee process. It had to go to both chambers and eventually to the governor's desk. All they read was this is the proposition, and people were pulling their children out of schools. People were scared to call the cops. But on the flip side, you speak to somebody that's had their identity stolen. Somebody's Social Security number has been used, by somebody that's in the country illegally, and how much trouble they have to go through, and that's the argument for bills like this.
As anyone read, there was a good article in Slate that I told Julian to read, basically about this 19th century California case where these 22 women came over from China and were accused of being prostitutes, and it's basically the case where the Supreme Court first sort of really came down hard on the notion that immigration is very much a federal issue and should not be dealt with by the states for a number of reasons, including that, for states to be acting sort of rogue on these issues, that it could create a sort of an international conflict, which we can't risk them doing. But I recommend that to anyone here. In between the blogs about Mad Men and New Girl is that article, and it's really good.
And the president's obviously very outspoken against these state immigration laws. But at the same time, and I think this is lost on a lot of folks out there that follow it, is that the Obama administration has prosecuted or referred for prosecution more undocumented immigrants for illegal entry than 3 years than President Bush did in 8 years. The last time any attempt at immigration reform was even put out there was President Bush. And the harshest immigration law to date passed at the federal level was passed under President Clinton. But now it's obviously, a partisan issue where the president can't go to, San Diego or to El Paso and say, hey, I've separated more families than anybody in history. Vote for me. And at the flip side, Republicans don't believe him. You have Chairman Lamar Smith from the House Judiciary Committee saying, his prosecutorial discretion guidelines is backdoor amnesty. So it's... it depends on who you ask and what you believe.
Well, it'll also be interesting to see how the fate of the Arizona law affects the conversation and the, not this election cycle, but I think the next election cycle. When you think back to 2010, Perry just hammered Bill White, who was the Democrat running against him for governor, for having a sanctuary city in Houston. And sanctuary city is, a sort of like a boogeyman argument. The laws in Houston are not significantly different from state laws. But that really resonated with people, and they didn't want these sanctuary cities. And then, of course, ironically, then Perry got hammered for being soft on immigration because of the in-state tuition laws.
The heart is coming.
Just these things, it's hard to predict exactly how they're going to manifest themselves.
In 2007, it was the state's attorney general's office that said, we can't pass immigration laws. This is preempted by the federal government, so, hands off, let's not do this. And, 5 years later, here we are.
So the over-under on this at the Supreme Court is interesting because Elena Kagan has to recuse herself, right?
Yeah. So if they're split 4-4, then there will be no opinion issued and the injunction will stand. But what can happen, like Ben brought up, other states have passed similar laws. So the Supreme Court can take up one of those if it gets to that level. So they can still make a ruling. And if it's even if the Arizona law is upheld, individuals can still file suit depending on how it is put in place. Individuals can say, my rights are violated because of this, and that, which can also reach the Supreme Court. But tomorrow is, for all intents and purposes, the Super Bowl of immigration enforcement.
Do we have any idea?
The World Series, sorry, I don't know what you guys prefer.
Do we have any idea which side will win, ultimately?
No idea.
All right. Well, let's move on and talk about a guy with some very strong opinions. How was that?
Who's that?
Ben.
Did anyone see Don McElroy on the Colbert Report last night?
Painfully so, yes, I did. I had to stop and take a break and then come back a few hours later to watch the rest of it because I felt so bad for the man. Yes, I felt horrible for him.
Don McElroy is the former State Board of Education chairman. He was around for some of the particularly contentious battles over the
science
and history standards in the state. And he's not on the board anymore.
No, the Senate refused to, well, at least the Democrats refused to reconfirm him or confirm him as the chair. And so that was that.
To refresh your memory, he's the one who, you know, ardently believes that humans and dinosaurs were on the earth at the same time.
Which, and to his defense, a third of Texans believe the same thing, according to a Texas Tribune poll. So.
Well, yeah. Well, hold on. We have Q&A coming up. Got thrown off track. So he's a dentist. What else can we list about him? He's the subject, or one of the subjects, I think the primary subject of this new movie that just premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival called The Revisionaries. I talked to the director about it, and he said, you know, we obviously sort of don't approve of his actions. You know, they're fairly left-leaning, the people that made the movie, but they wanted to create sort of as accurate a character portrait as possible of all the people. So people are saying it's a pretty fair take on the situation, which I think is probably a good thing if you're just going to let the sort of facts speak for themselves. But I'd get beyond Ben, who obviously has a sort of very low threshold of pain. You know what? What did you guys think of the Colbert performance last night?
You got to give him kudos for at least going on.
He didn't really seem to know what he was getting into. And I think, you know, whatever you think about the science standards, he is a painfully nice guy. I mean, he sort of shows up to our office and comes and, you know, just really wants to have sort of these very friendly, frank conversations with
just
everyone.
Wants to bake dinosaur cookies.
Right, exactly.
No, KUT's Nathan Bernier, who does a lot of our education coverage, has said the exact same thing. It's like you read some of the comments that he makes, or you watch a school board meeting, and you go into the interview with him thinking one way, and yeah, he disarms you, and he's a nice guy.
Well, and he's very well read, very sincere, very earnest. That's why I thought sort of watching the Colbert thing, that's just not a good venue for him or for anyone really, because he's trying to have a sincere discussion, and it's sort of a setup where anything he says, the audience is going to howl at, and Colbert's sort of there to mock him. So the whole thing felt fairly mean-spirited. It's sort of a preconceived narrative where Colbert's asking him, like, you know, the decisions you make affect all textbooks everywhere, which, a little bit of reporting will show you that it's not the case. And, you know, might have been a big thing at one point, but less and less Texas's influence on other textbooks exists. I would have structured that sentence differently.
Well, which textbook did you use to figure out how to structure it in the first place?
It was probably one of my third grade textbooks when I lived here in Texas.
Little brown book, or is that?
I don't know. But the real issue really is like you said, you have a third at least of the state is not that far in disagreement with him, and he essentially did what he was elected to do on the state board. You know, which brings up, you know, is this really the best way to make textbooks?
Well, and we had a state redistricting committee hearing about a week ago talking about the idea of, so we've got nine school board members?
15.
15, sorry. I don't know where the nine came
from. You ran down to the nearest nine.
It's baseball season, right? Oh, yeah. Nine players on a field.
So he's 15. Stuck on the Supreme Court, yeah.
There you go.
Facebook friends.
Eight. I don't know. So 15, but they were asking, look, should we have 15? That means that, you know, your district is twice as large as a Senate district, or almost twice as large as a Senate.
Oh yeah, these people represent more people than many states. So
right.
It's like,
and so, you know, now they're saying, well, maybe we should go back to what the law previously was, which was congressional districts. Number of congressional districts was number of school board members that we had. But yeah, I mean, and this comes back to redistricting. it's made it so that maybe 30% of the state believes similar things, but because of redistricting, you have, you know, 60% of the school board that believes these things, and that's what we get.
It's also, you know, an interesting way to have it's the classic Texas story that the national media likes to bring on, right?
Yes. Stupid Texans. I believe that's the headline.
That's the name of this show, I think.
I was going to say, there's another one. It's called Fat Texans.
That's the name of the show?
No. That's a second documentary.
Gosh.
Sorry.
I went on a run this morning.
I'm stealing Reeve's transition. Basically, I mean, there's another big Texan who is not...
She's tall.
Well, she's very tall. Prominent tall Texan who is, you know, one of the subjects of an HBO documentary.
She's not the subject.
Well, she's one of the...
She's in it.
She's a high-profile interviewee.
Yeah, the Don McElroy interview is, like, about him.
Right.
This is not... This is about obesity.
We're talking about the comptroller. Right. Susan Combs, yes. The very tall comptroller.
Very skinny.
You know... Right, exactly. I think, you know, I thought it was pretty interesting that she and her office was just broadcasting like crazy that, you know, her role in this documentary talking about how much obesity is costing the state of Texas. You know, there are a lot of questions that, you know, there were a bunch of programs in the last legislative session that were sort of student education, student obesity, you know, different programs that got slashed in the budget cuts. And, certainly didn't see any reference of that when she was talking about how obesity is, you know, making Texas completely cash-strapped.
But don't state lawmakers also scoff at the idea that about federal regulations in public schools and food? I mean, you know, it's a nanny state and people should be able to do what they want.
Yep, they're quietly, you know, like 20 times more state-funded bariatric surgeries this year than there were 2 years ago. You know, Medicaid is paying for an exorbitant amount of weight loss surgery in Texas.
Well, I know the first time I ever interviewed her after I moved to Austin was the BBC wanted to do an interview with her because when she was ag commissioner, she had the big push to get Coke machines out of schools. And that was her big rally cry then was, you know, get Coke machines out, get the food vending machines that had Twinkies and donuts and get them out and put in juices and apples, although apples don't keep very well in a vending machine. But I mean, this is something she's been at for a while. But yeah, nobody was there to save those programs during the last legislative session.
She has the big takeaway quote in the trailer for the movie, which you can see on our website. And she's been widely quoted in news reports because it's like a good quote. It's like, you know, obesity will crush this country. And everyone quotes her as saying into oblivion, but she actually says in oblivion. And that's been bothering me. So if you have questions or comments...
about
or about Reeve's grammar. Yeah.
You can email them to tribcast@texastribune.org, which I know actually wasn't, that email address wasn't working this week, but we fixed it today. So all those emails that you've been pouring in, we'll get them now. On behalf of Julian, Ben, Emily, I'm Reeve. Thanks for coming out.